wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago. Time for our weekly check-in with Gordon Goldsborough. He's here to tell us about this week's episode of Abandoned Manitoba. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
So what are we talking about this week?
Well, anyone who travels along Portage Avenue here in Winnipeg can't help but note the abundance of mid-century architecture. You know, those low brick buildings, mostly from the 50s and 60s, I think it reflects a defining characteristic of Winnipeg that will surprise no one. This is a city that spreads out. So rather than growing upward, it grew outward. And the St. James suburb, well, I think it played a major role in that expansion.
So why did that outward expansion occur?
Well, in the 1950s, Winnipeg's population was booming, and therefore more housing was needed urgently. And there were several contributing factors for this rapid growth. First was mechanization on Manitoba farms. This meant that they needed fewer laborers. You know, in the old days when they had horses, they had to have a lot of people to tend to horses. Now you had tractors and other machines like that. Well, you don't need as many helpers. And this then prompted a mass migration into cities. My parents were part of that agricultural exodus. Both of them had grown up on farms, but the city, well, it offered them opportunities. On top of that, there were veterans returning from the Second World War, and they were eager to start new lives. Scores of them came to Winnipeg to be educated, to get jobs, well, and to start families. And this was, of course, the era of the baby boom. You know, Bruce and I are part of that generation. And you know, and that in turn, of course, brought prosperity. All those people and all those jobs and more people, therefore, were able to afford the status symbol of an automobile. Before that, only the very wealthy could afford a car. Now anyone could. And this meant that you didn't need to live in the downtown core. Before, you had to be close to work so you could walk to work. And well, now that you had a car, you could drive. And this meant the continued erosion of the downtown. Contractors began to respond to the demand for residential housing, and they started building vast tracts of bungalows in St. James. You drive down any side street in St. James, row after row of houses. Other suburbs, same thing. But then for smaller households or, you know, for single people where they didn't need a whole house, well, apartment blocks made sense, and the rush was on to serve that market.
So tell us how you did research for this. How do you find information about construction trends during this particular period?
Well, I was really lucky. The City of Winnipeg Archives has, well, vast collections. And among those collections are sets of what are called index books for building permits. You know, of course, anytime you want to build something, you have to get a building permit from the local municipality. In this case, they had ones from the what was called the Rural Municipality of St. James, later the City of St. James. They had the indexes for the building permits issued by the city between 1950 and 1961, which is right where all these buildings were being built. So I spent hours poring over these index books, and I identified no fewer than 42 of these mid-century apartment blocks. And they really, they're concentrated in just a 3.5 kilometer stretch of Portage Avenue. They range in height from 2 stories up to as high as 8 stories. They have an average of about 18 suites each. And then between 1951 and 1964, those were kind of the outer boundaries of the buildings that I found. They averaged 3 blocks a year. And in fact, in 1 year, 1955 was a real standout. They built 7 of these buildings. So it was just a building boom in this period. They're throwing up these blocks as fast as they could all along Portage Avenue. And the permits themselves, well, they would have provided me things like the name of the architect. I don't have that. But at least they did tell me the name of the contractor. And one of the names really stood out. A name that we've mentioned here on Abandoned Manitoba before, Frank Lount.
So remind us, who was Frank Lount?
Well, he was born in Ontario, but like a lot of Ontarians, he came west to seek his fortune. He arrived in Manitoba in 1921. Then after the Second World War, and of course, he was a developer, he saw all this burgeoning demand. He formed a company called the Silver Heights Development Company. And as you might imagine, he focused on the area we now call Silver Heights. He built scores of structures. You know, in my research at the City of Winnipeg Winnipeg Archives, I found nearly 800 building permits that were issued to him. Most of them were for single-family homes of various sizes. But he was also responsible for other sort of landmarks in this region. One of the buildings that I think listeners will remember seeing is the Silver Heights Shopping Center. It's right at the corner of Portage and Mount Royal. It's still standing today, and wow, it has an unmistakable sort of retro vibe. It was built in 1953, and it's still got that look to it. He also built a service station for something called the North Star Oil Company, of course, long gone. He built a Roman Catholic chapel, and he was responsible for at least, and I don't know for sure if this is complete, but there may be more, at least 6 apartment blocks along Portage Avenue. And I suspect, although I don't know for certain, because again, you'd need to see the building permits themselves, I think he used the lift slab construction method, the one that he had pioneered in Canada. And we did talk about this method way back in 2024, and especially the problems it can cause. Because in fact, there have been cases where buildings built with this lift slab method have collapsed catastrophically. In fact, listeners may remember that back in early 2024, there was a sudden evacuation of a building called the Birchwood Terrace because it had been built with lift slab and there was concern that it might fall down. Well, Frank Loud had built that, but fortunately, it was repaired. The Birchwood Terrace is now occupied again. People have been moved back into it. But beyond that terrace, Lount built the Silver Heights apartment. He built the Park Towers, the Park Terrace, the Hilden House, and St. James Place. And he was only one of many well-known contractors that were shaping the St. James landscape. There were others, too.
Can you tell us about the others?
Well, another one of the major mid-century builders in St. James was a fellow named James Carmichael. He had a company called Arlington Builders, and they constructed at least 5 apartment blocks along Portage: the Will Allen, the Will Burridge, the Will Haven, the Will Crest, and just to break the trend, Georgian Towers. I don't know why the Will thing. I couldn't find any reason to have done it, but apparently he did that. He also built several St. James schools, including Strathmillan, where my dad was a principal at one time, Britannia, where both of my parents taught, Linwood and Sansom, very big schools at one time in St. James. And one of the other mysterious, in fact, I've still not found any information about this fellow, his name was Gabriel Hartman. But his name is preserved because he built 3 blocks along Portage Avenue on the south side in 1952. They're side by side, and they're called the Hartman A, the Hartman B, and the Hartman C. So if you know nothing else, you'll know that, well, he had put his name on the landscape. But he also built the Capri Apartments a little further west. Now, the reason why I've completely fallen off the radar is that this really used all my sources, and I can find nothing about Mr. Hartman other than that he appears to have retired to Miami, Florida, but I've been stymied in all my attempts to find any information about him. And then the third person I think deserves to be mentioned is Edward Benjaminson. His company built the Thunderbird Apartments. And boy, if you don't see that one, you haven't been looking, because it's very distinctive. It has this great big Thunderbird motif facing Portage Avenue. He also built the Billingsley Manor in 1959. And I think that was a turning point, in fact, in local design, because unlike many of its neighbors, you know, which rarely exceeded 3 stories, the Billingsley rose to 6. It was twice as high as most of the others. And in fact, here's a clear trend that I saw in all those blocks. The earliest ones from the 1950s were the shortest. And as you go into the late 50s and early 60s, they grew taller. And in fact, as you went further west, of course, as the places nearer to the downtown were used up, they, of course, headed west. And likewise, they grew taller. So there's trends in terms of time, times in terms of space. And well, you get into places that are 6, 7 stories tall. And of course, now, well, it's commonplace for residential towers to be over 10 stories, and that trend is growing still. My son-in-law, who's an urban planner, he's routinely talking about apartment blocks that are 15, 20, 30 stories tall, even in, you know, suburban areas. It's a trend that is happening today.
So now we're building upwards as well as outwards.
That's right, yeah.
What do you think the developments in St. James meant for Winnipeg as a whole?
Well, ultimately, I think that the houses and the blocks that were being built in St. James were a major contributor to the decline of the downtown area. You know, in what was at one time the city's retail core. I remember as a kid going downtown with mom to go shopping. Who does that anymore? You know, the westward expansion filled in the areas of places like Wolseley, St. Matthews, Minto. And as the area to the west, you know, all these apartment blocks, all these rows of bungalows, well, that then drove the interest in developers in another way. In 1956, a group of them purchased an old horse racing track at the edge of the city. They demolished it, and 3 years later, they opened Polo Park. Of course, that was Winnipeg's first suburban shopping mall, and that, I think, really was the beginning of the end for the downtown, because now you had this huge retail center catering to all of this suburban development, and you didn't need to go downtown anymore. And so I think, you know, it took decades to finally play out, but Eaton's, the Bay, all the other retail places just couldn't manage to compete, and they've all closed. And, you know, I work downtown, and I'm hard-pressed to list more than a handful of retail places anymore. You just don't think of it as a place to shop. And so I think we can partly thank, depending on your perspective, blame builders like Frank Lount, Edward Benjaminson, you know, Gabriel Hartman, and other contemporaries in St. James for helping set that change in motion, you know, and for shaping the vast urban sprawl that defines modern Winnipeg. So next time you're traveling along Portage Avenue and you haven't thought about it before, have a look at all those buildings and think, yep, that's what killed the downtown.
Wow. Okay. Thank you, Gordon. What's up for next week?
Well, back in 2017, my friend and colleague, Christian Cassidy, offered a downtown Winnipeg walking tour that I found, well, just fascinating, just, you know, illuminating. It focused on a category of buildings that I think many of us might think twice about stepping inside. You know, and I was reminded of that tour the other day when I was walking along Main Street, and I noticed that one of the buildings we'd visited back then is now closed. So next week, I'm going to revisit that tour and share what it taught me.
Thanks for this, Gordon.
We'll see you next week. Bye-bye for now.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.